You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
I love that the rodeo clowns here, after being told several times that we're live today, we're live on YouTube, or as our engineers like to call it, Twitch. We are live, and I've told Greg Cody this, and I've told Stugatz this, but the rodeo clowns were out getting coffee. Stugatz is still not back. Greg Cody has returned, but he is deeply winded because of the asthma inhaler. And because of climbing the stairs. So that's what I've got to work with right now.
Who needs me?
And Stugatz is going to walk in at some point and not know that we're on the air or have forgotten that we're on the air. But it allows me a moment to go a little bit serious here. And we'll get back to all the goofiness in a second, because I know you guys get plenty tired of me railing about things on the sermon being annoying. As a lecturer with bad tone on societal ills. But the Naomi Osaka story has been fascinating to me over the last couple of days for a lot of different reasons that include some history that I think is important before we arrive at discussing what is presently happening now, which is a long time ago when tennis was patty cake. If you look back at ESPN Classic and Navratilova and Chris Everett playing, it's a much different tennis. It's just a charming, quaint time of you know, manicured lawns and cute skirts and trophies. And it was a different time in America at the start of the advent of women in sports in a way that made people pay attention. And those women, Billie Jean King and Martina Navratilova and Chris Everett, started a gender and sexuality conversation before sports was ready to have it and before America was ready to have it. As you realize that all of the things in the arena right now are coming through the prism of politics and race and everything that's happening, just know that once upon a time, the women's game, that game was the country club, right? It was the country club. It was privilege. And it was just a different... Chris Everett was the only one in that equation allowed to be a country sweetheart, okay? Cute as a curtsy. Like, just sort of 1970s, dates Jimmy Connors, bad boy, just a different time. And so from there, Compton invades the country club. Serena Williams and Venus Williams and their loud, crazy genius of a father, Richard Williams, changed a lot of things in that sport, largely a white sport to that point, for the privilege, changed things in ways that, man, Serena's a champion as we've ever had. Uncommonly strong, might be the greatest of her gifts, because what she endured was critiques of her body and her attitude and her swagger and her outbursts and her demeanor and, you know, if we're being honest about it, a lot of coded stuff about her culture. Because Compton had gotten to the country club. So that's the backstory. And Serena Williams is as good a champion as we've ever seen in our lifetimes anywhere in sports. Naomi Osaka wrestles the sport away from her, from Serena Williams. And she arrives in a place where she is very young. Serena and Venus went through a different set of things coming through this country club. She is very young. But she is at the center right now, physically, the way that she looks as a phenom, culturally, as America's at war with itself and with people who are others. She's got Asian. She's got black. She is at the center of wrestling that sport away from Serena Williams, who changed it with her power and her grace. And she wrestles it away. And now, by quitting, she wins. By admitting weakness, she is strong. At the end of Mental Health Month, that sport with its rules and rigidities and a lack of humanity you see throughout sports right now with the entertainers as we spit on them and throw bottles at them. In that sport, that woman just quit because she is telling all of us, as someone who's anxious around the media and doesn't want to be speaking and was asked why she's wearing those black names on her mask, says, you tell me why I'm wearing it. We should remember their names. There is what feels like after a pandemic. I'm telling you, it's crazy down here, Stu Gatz. People are shooting each other. It right. feels like 1980s Miami, seven Miami issues. Hialeah gunman just going into over a record dispute or a social media dispute. Two killed, 21 wounded. Because people are crazy, and it's spilling over into places. We're spitting on Trae Young. We're throwing popcorn at Russell Westbrook. We're throwing a bottle at Kyrie Irving. The entertainers are not human. Kevin Durant is giving the quote that he's giving, just telling you, please look at us as human beings, right? Kevin Durant is telling you this, and we're in the center of sports being the representative for America. This is Kevin Durant. He says, fans got to grow up at some point. I know that being in the house for a year and a half with the pandemic got a lot of people on edge, got a lot of people stressed out. But when you come to these games, you have to realize these men are human. We are not animals. We're not in the circus. You come into the game, it's not all about you as a fan. Have some respect for human beings and have some respect for yourself. Your mother wouldn't be proud of you throwing water bottles at basketball players or spitting on players or tossing popcorn. So grow the bleep up and enjoy the game. It's bigger than you. At the center of this is these athletes continue to represent what is happening in America. As things get crazy, the country club has just told someone who is admitting to mental health issues, you must do this or you will be fined, and we will keep fining you. And if you do not do it, we will default you. And she says, in the age of player empowerment, across a decade of athletes realizing the strength of their individual brands, she rises up and says, no, you're not going to default me. I'm leaving to protect my mental health, and becomes bigger than the sport on the spot at the end of Mental Health Month. As we can have a larger think piece conversation culturally about what's going on in America as a tennis club, where the symbolism is you play literally within the lines. At a tennis club, these are our rules. And she's saying, no, I'm weak. And in that, there is strength for her to admit her mental health issues. And the humanity of the person who just wrestled that away from Serena Williams. She is not in any way weak. Wrestled that entire damn sport away from her. And she is giving voice to, well, I've tried to work behind the scenes with this club, and they just want me to do it their ways. And I'm pleading for mental health from this generation, the social media generation, 23 years old, a new generation, younger than even Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is old in this world when he's an egg chasing people on Twitter. She is young, and she is dealing with all the social ills that come with our addictions to this social media that make mental health hard at a time, Stu Gatz said. It's just hard to be physically. It's hard to be an athlete. There's so much competition. I don't think that we understand how hard it is to get to where these people are. And if she doesn't want to talk because of her mental health issues, are we supposed to tell her work becomes more important? Because she just announced to the...
We're supposed to figure out a way to make it right for her and for anyone else who is going through that. I'm confused by tennis's stance here because there's a Grand Slam panel. They have a whole thing for all four of the Grand Slams. And now they're all kind of, you know, going against... Naomi in this case, and the goal should be, how do we keep her comfortable? She is the sport. How do we make her want to be here as opposed to making her go away? Because she will go away. Dan, she made $70 million last year. She'll go away. I mean, if she's not comfortable.
I mean, somebody has to blink here, and the sport loses because, as Stu Gatz said, it's not just the French Open. It's all four of the majors banding together and saying, play, do your post-game, post-match interview, or be fined, or be suspended and or expelled from the tournament, and something has to change there, because if Naomi draws a line, tennis loses its biggest star, or at least its brightest star. So something's got to happen here. I do think that tennis has to look at what is so upsetting about these post-match interviews? If they feel like an interrogation to a young athlete, if she feels like the questions are challenging her very mental health, then something's wrong on the asking end, not just her refusing to answer.
I feel like she's just trying to decompress. I feel like she's putting on a brave face for fans and for her own career, for the glory of championships. While she's playing, she's suffering through this. She's just trying to decompress and avoid a certain trigger. That doesn't mean that she's not riddled with anxiety while she's in it. She just wants to avoid something that can potentially make it worse.
Again, I want to give you some of the history of the sport, okay? It devours its young. Jennifer Capriati went through this fame machine, the social media machine, before it was a social media machine, and it churned her out an addict, okay? So this is a very lonely sport. To get as great as these women are at this, it is just a lot of lonely time in your young years. It's not quite gymnastics, Stugatz, but it can distort a person to give them fame and make that particular life the life of choosing, I've got to go beat Serena Williams.
Right.
It can make a lot of things mentally difficult. I don't know if it's as lonely as swimming, but it's a very lonely sport.
But a lot of people have thrived, have gotten through it. Venus and Serena and Martina and Chris Evert at a very young age. But everyone's different, and that's what's confusing. Everyone's different. Everyone handles this stuff differently. And what you see is this uber-confident person out on the court, and you just think, hey, press conference, what's the big deal? She just performed in front of 80,000 people and millions on TV. It's a big deal to her. She's not comfortable.
She's not just teaching us about mental health issues, okay? The other statement she is making, which is not a quiet one, is my self-care matters more than my work, even though you view my work as very important. Even though my work is worth all of these millions of dollars, it's not as important as my self-care. And to me, the entitlement of everything happening in American sports right now, Stugatz, and the way these people are judged is, no, I'm Piers Morgan. I deserve for you to entertain me and then talk to me about it afterward because the media has to matter. What do you mean the media doesn't matter? Piers Morgan is calling you a crybaby. Last time we saw him, he was walking off the set because someone challenged his viewpoints on women. He's calling that woman weak, Piers Morgan. Like, how does that happen? And so you arrive in a place, Stugatz, where she is now, whether she wants to or not, she becomes a symbol that becomes larger than her sport because she becomes one of these issues. Not a human being, but an issue. She's at the center of this. And I worry for her because I don't actually know, Stugatz, how much of this is a strong arm by her of telling tennis, well, I'm just leaving, power move, this is my management, and how much of it is just someone who struggles with this stuff telling us, I tried to work with these people on this. I need help with this. I don't want to be doing these press conferences afterward. And they're like, nope, slippery slope. If we allow you to sit out a press conference for social anxiety, then it becomes like the comfort dog on a plane. And next thing you know, Cody's bringing on some giant, you know, boa constrictor on the plane because it comforts him.
Comfort snake?
Because part of the deal, Stugatz, is the customer wants access to you. But we get so entitled by the access that we all become Piers Morgan, that we deserve answers from this woman when she wins. And if not, we must punish her with fine and shame and banishment from the tournament.
I agree with everything she is saying. I agree with what she did. From a journalistic standpoint, does it matter? Like, if you don't have her right after the match, does it really matter? It makes your job more difficult, right?
I would say journalists would argue, and we'll have this discussion with Howard Bryant, that yeah, it matters, and you're worried about precedent. I don't think people would use this as an excuse. I don't think anyone's going to fake anxiety just to get out of talking to the press. But one thing that you also have to apply here, that I don't know how many tennis fans I'm talking to in the Zoom, let alone the audience, but tennis journalists are tough. They are a rude breed. Yes. It is.
They're the toughest.
Yeah.
They're the toughest. Across sports media, I don't believe there are a tougher askers. There are not tougher askers of questions than tennis journalists.
And there are certain things that journalists wouldn't dare ask American athletes covering professional leagues here in the United States that still doesn't apply over in certain places of the world. Some of these questions are downright rude.
Soccer's worst internationally.
Soccer has a tabloid stuff, but in terms of like directly to your face, because a lot of those soccer journalists, they don't even get FaceTime with these athletes. Like the direct rude questions that tennis players have to face after they've just poured everything into their match, physically and emotionally, a lot of it comes near or over crossing the line. So I understand where certainly across the board where Osaka's coming from.
There has been some blowback. Not all the players support what she's doing. Ashley Barty, who's a very prominent player on the women's tour, has said, hey, that's part of our job, quote unquote. There's a contentiousness between journalists and athletes in post-match settings sometimes, particularly if you're talking to a losing athlete. A couple of days ago, after Game 4, my colleague at the Miami Herald, Anthony Chang, asked Bam Adebayo something he didn't like, and there was a give and take there. The question was, what do you need to do to improve? And Bam said, you've watched me for 4 years. What do I need to do to improve? And he turned it around, and it got rather testy. And so that's not even a rude question. If you're asking Naomi Osaka something that she thinks is hurtful to her, then you have to police that end of it.
I can hear people listening to this and say, be tougher. Toughen up.
Oh, sure.
Toughen
up. Of course they're saying that.
Toughen up.
Yep.
Maybe I will do what Bam did, which was seize on a media member for saying what his own teammates have been saying in the press. Like, this is probably just a pivot for me to take it out on Bam Adebayo, I guess. But Bam, what are you doing there? Like, jumping down, what do you think I need to improve? Literally what Goran Dragic just told me, which is get more aggressive. You've been hearing it for 3 years, but you're mad at me. This is a surprise to you? If it's a surprise to you, Bam, we've got a larger issue.
Are you guys not interested in sort of the macro entitlement as all American sports fans, as Piers Morgan, American sports fans who are condemning players right and left so that Kevin Durant has to teach you how to behave at games? And the part that I find interesting about entitlement is you saw this quote in the New Yorker from an anonymous GM, right, on the player empowerment in today's NBA. The anonymous GM said the players have all the leverage in every situation. I think it's the worst thing that ever happened to professional sports on all levels, end quote. And what he's basically saying there is what I think is the worst thing that ever happened in professional sports is something that happened to me. It's my power got taken away by these people having power, and this is the same thing that's happened to Piers Morgan. If you give the young 23-year-old the right to have her own power, you're taking away some of Piers Morgan's power. And so if we're all looking at it through that prism, damn straight, I'm going to throw a bottle at Kyrie Irving when he's wrecking my team again after already wrecking my team.
Oh, you don't step on Lucky. Lucky.
You did kind of instigate that.
I will say. I mean, it's got to be especially triggering. Throw bottles. Don't do any of that. But if I'm watching at home, I'm like, oh, bleep this. Kyrie's stepping on Lucky. How dare you? I'm someone that's had to be held back by my friends whenever FSU players stomp on the U. So please, like, just when North Carolina does the U upside down, I want to fight my television. So I get it. I'm just not throwing bottles at the players.
Jessica, which is the one that makes you most enraged across and all of your fandoms, because you root for 40 different teams? Which is the one that makes you unreasonable? Because I have to grant everyone that Kyrie is just such a bad messenger, because there's so many reasons to not like him outside of the ones that people are choosing to not like him about. Like, there are two camps on Kyrie Irving. All these things that we all agree, yeah, those kind of make you a jerk, Kyrie. And then the other things that people attach to, which he thinks are the reason that we hate him. But no, Kyrie, it's just half of you. It's just that one half. Like,
I wish that half would just shut the hell up.
But you're the guy whose team flooded the street after one playoff victory. Like, if you were Kyrie Irving, you would be telling people we hear all the time. You'd be doing a 24-hour streaming podcast, like, where just all access to all your life. You would love player empowerment so much, Stugatz.
I really would, yet I rail against it all the time.
Jessica, Which is the one that makes you enraged in a way that makes you abandon all reason?
Well, I think people think that I should be standing up for Lucky, the Celtics logo, because he's kind of fighting Irish leprechaun adjacent. But that's a sad excuse for a leprechaun caricature. I think that logo is kind of creepy and weird. I don't like it. It's too human-like. It's not for me. The Notre Dame leprechaun is much more stately in its, old-fashioned tradition. So
stately.
I had to get that in there.
Creepy. Like it.
Stately. He desecrated. This is what the war in America is right now that makes us throw bottles. Kyrie Irving, Kevin Garnett says Celtics lives matter. Like, he is out there respecting the logo. He is not riding with Kyrie Irving. He is saying that is wrong. You simply do not do that. Somebody throw a bottle at Kevin Garnett. See how that one goes for you. Because of something he did that was disrespectful.
He won't go after you, though. He'll pretend he's going to go after you, but he'll never get to you.
He'll go after the younger, the shorter European guy next to you.
So let me get this right. The guy who wished Tim Duncan a happy Mother's Day, knowing that Tim Duncan's mom died when he was a teenager, and the guy that told Carmelo that his wife tasted like Honey Nut Cheerios is saying, stepping on Lucky's where you cross the line.
The second one has not been confirmed. I think that might be urban myth. We might need to get from Amin El-Hassan the facts on that
one. I'm being reckless with Kevin Garnett's reputation.
Kevin Garnett has sided with Kyrie Irving on, yes, Stugat, you are absolutely right. When you're Kyrie Irving and you said you were going to stay and then you leave and you join a super team that's unlikable as any super team that's ever been made, run by three trolls, and then you go back to Boston and you score 140 because Kevin Durant is shooting. After, this is from Josh Eberle, Stugatz. Kevin Durant went 552 days between NBA games with the worst injury in the sport. It's his first season back. He missed half this year. He's 32 and he's still leading the playoffs in scoring, 34.8 points a game, with a career high postseason true shooting percentage of 69.6, which is better than Shaq was dunking on jump shots.
Do it against Giannis.
Okay, but with that guy on your team, wait a minute, you've said the Nets are going to roll to the championship.
I have.
Are you going to give Kevin Durant a ring just for that quote from before where he was perfectly reasonable?
So the quote was, well, no, because I was getting angry as I heard it until he did a very, very smart thing. And I think he knew he was up in the air when he's telling everyone to grow up, but I have a burner account, right? But he went to mom. He went to mom, and that's where it really resonated with me. It was such a great move by Kevin Durant, and he left me no space to get mad at him.
I mean, will you give him a ring?
Because mom would be embarrassed.
Will you give him a ring for that quote?
No.
No. Okay.
No, ring.
So Kyrie Irving's on that team.
They built
that team of trolls. It's super interesting, super unlikable. They put up near $150 to end your Boston season of great hope after the Miami Heat ended your Boston season of great hope. And you step on the logo on your way out the door after teasing those people, saying, look, this is the bare minimum, Boston. Can I please go in there and you just not be loud racist?
Right.
Can you just keep your racism within? And Boston was so close to having the moral high ground. And it needs to be stated for the record that one guy is not all of Boston. All of Boston is not that awful guy throwing a bottle. Okay. One bad person makes it look like that if you have your reputation, just like one bad police officer can do it for the police force, one bad sports writer for sports writers. That guy does not represent Boston.
No, but Kyrie's smart. He knows that city. He knows the fan base. To your point, he set him up on the front end. Don't be loud, racist. He instigated by stepping on the logo. He knew there was going to be a dummy who was going to throw a water bottle.
He planned it all.
Everyone is watching.
He planned it all. He tricked Boston into that. And almost Boston survived it until a bottle was thrown. And they almost got out of there. They can't have the moral high ground on Kyrie came in there, did all that, and we were classy about it because one dude I'm guessing most of Boston wants to arrest today. One dude made it look like that for everybody.
I mean, we're red pilling the audience right now. You may be giving Kyrie a little too much credit right now. It's a crisis actor in the sands. Is that what you're going with? I just think Kyrie's going to Kyrie. And he's Russell Brand in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He has a lot of tattoos of a lot of different deities, and he's just a walking contradiction.
But you can't see Kyrie saying, hey, they were pretty well behaved. Let me try one more thing.
No,
I'm going to step on the logo.
I thought you were doing a bit. I didn't think you were actually serious with that. I thought you were just...
I was afraid you were.
making him a mastermind of some sort that somehow orchestrated all that because he knew... why not? He planted that guy. He paid an actor to escalate everything and take that arrest charge and take the shame of being the racist in Boston who now represents Boston as part of his master plan.
Soros, man.
I love a villainous team that knows it's a villain and wants to be a villain. And Brooklyn's doing that better than anybody since the Big Three Heat in 2012.
Okay,
I love it.
But don't throw things at the players. They're human beings. They are not. This is not the zoo.
Yes, I'll agree with that.
Why do you hate your athletes so much?
But if you're going to throw something.
I don't know if we should do that, Chris.
It seems pretty harmless of all the things to throw.
I thought popcorn was harmless, but then it wasn't.
Make it an empty.
What are you talking about?
Technically, spit should be harmless. It should, but it's the disrespect behind it.
It's the disrespect behind it.
Make it an empty water bottle.
Throw a towel that says we hear.
A water bottle from that distance could not have been empty. It couldn't have been. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would have fluttered in the wind.
Right. Like the physics of that are impossible.
Right. Right. What's in the bottle? Right. Yeah.
Okay, so how full was the water bottle? I think we need to do a report because that is a gradation. Those are degrees on the crime. Because I will agree with if it had been a totally empty water bottle that fluttered nearby and just ended up near, I don't know, somebody more benign than that, an assistant coach of some sort. Didn't one of the Knicks, very quietly, I believe, was it? Didn't one of the Knicks say somebody threw a beer at me?
Not that I recall.
I believe that this just happened and nobody reports it because there's not the video. I believe that this is not, that we can't add this to all the other stories. Somebody spit on Trae Young. Somebody threw popcorn on Russell Westbrook. Somebody threw a bottle at Kyrie Irving because we don't have the video for another player saying this during the playoffs.
It was quickly. Who said he had the beer thrown on him?
I wish you were, because that would have helped me a little while ago.
Dan, he's trying to Google how much water was in the water bottle.
I'm watching the video right now.
He's a Knicks fan. Yes. How does he not know that one of his own players?
I'm working for you right now. Give me a second.
It was a real who's on first thing, because I kept telling him, quickly, quickly, quickly. And he's like, I don't know how much water was in the bottle. I'm like, no, it's quickly.
Hold on a second.
Did he say it out loud? I feel like I heard him say out loud. It was
going as fast as I can. No, the player is quickly.
Does Jessica have any idea what who's on first is?
Yes, Dan. I know who's on first is. That's a classic.
She doesn't.
Who's
does
on
she?
First? Right. What's on second? Someone's on second. I don't know who's on second. Who's on second? Nailed who's it. Supposed to be on first? But who's
no,
on
who's
second?
On first?
No,
yes.
Who's on first?
What's on second, right?
What's on second?
Yeah, what's on second?
Who's
yeah.
on third?
Who's on?
No, who's on first?
I don't know.
Who's on first, Dan?
You sure?
I can't do that. We're not going to be young YouTubers and doing this from the 1920s, are we?
I want to do this. This is what I want to do right now. I want to stop. I want to stop everything that we're doing right now. And me and Greg and Stugatz will do the old portion of the show while the young shipping container gets together a Who's on First routine that will be performed live on YouTube, which we now call Twitch.
No. You play Fortnite if you want to keep up in these YouTube streets. You don't do it with Abbott and Costello.
Little game of who's on first, Mike.
You
yes.
know, a little game of Fortnite.
I think it's funny and it's retro. And it's in my wheelhouse, says Greg Cook.
Yeah.
I feel like we have to prepare a who's on first routine to try and carry us into the next phase of our futuristic career as we join the kids in the future on Twitch and on YouTube, funded by DraftKings, by doing what I believe to be the original comedy bit. Was there any laughter before Who's on First? I feel like that's the oldest comedy bit.
It is.
Our second oldest, right after a caveman who farted climbing a tree.
Back in the day, Abbott and Costello used to perform Who's on First to thousands of people as like a pregame show at Major League Baseball games. That's how big it was.
So, Mike,
I love that this is Greg Cody's wheelhouse. He's just pulling out all the facts about who's
totally
on first.
It is totally his
right
wheelhouse,
now.
But I want to do this absurd as it is. The degree of difficulty is unfair to the shipping container. We're all splattered about, and I don't know where this is going to end up, but I am putting pressure on Mike Ryan in the shipping container to do what
used to be live
radio for us.
You get me out of this. It's a two-man job, Abbott and Costello. I got my Abbott and Costello, and I have full faith in Chris Cody to absolutely nail this one.
Okay. IU can't handle the truth. Get it ready, all right?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to be able to hit a clock, so tell me how long this routine takes, and I want to hit the ending of this to practice, because we're practicing for Friday. We're going to do 24 hours of live content. We are out of practice on doing live content. I know I speak for Stugatz and I when I say we miss live content. We miss sort of falling into ditches and just making up the show as we go along, and next thing you know, Who's On First is being conducted.
For those in the audience right now, what you're witnessing is a prime example of Dan using the fill. The problem is, he said, let's do this at the end of the segment, which I have marked for 17 minutes from now.
That's
so
fine.
Can you fill for 17
I've
minutes?
I've got it. It was a busy weekend, Stugatz. It was busy. There was a lot of stuff to talk about.
I believe the water bottle had somewhere between 30 and 40% water left in it. Okay, so that will get to Kyrie Irving. There's another player there. Are we certain that fan wasn't throwing it at the other player? I don't know who number 10 is.
Unfortunate landing spot if it was meant for somebody else. That's not a great situation.
No. This would give us an opportunity to relive the time that Dan and Stu Gods did the Who's On First routine with former Dolphins players. Oh, so this is a real deep
cut. Wait a minute. We got the Who's On First sound from ESPN. They let us have that?
Yeah, just give me 30 seconds to listen to it in cue, because comedy's changed over the last 15 years.
It's a really
so have sensibilities.
It is a really old, thank you, Mike. I appreciate you wrestling that away, and I want to get to that sound. We did a Who's On First routine, and I believe it featured Lusaka Polite. That's all I'm going to say to you. It's 15 years ago, so I do not remember entirely. But I do.
We did this.
Mike Ryan is roaring with laughter.
This was old when we did it 15 years ago.
Mike, hold on a second. You and Chris are laughing too hard. You don't even need to edit anymore. Just play it.
This is so good.
Just play it.
But we have to set this up for the audience, because I'm not sure those in the audience know about 2008 Miami Dolphins. Okay? Wildcat fever was sweeping a nation. Oh, you never knew who was going to be the quarterback. Was it going to be Ronnie Brown? Was it going to be Lusaka Polite? You have no idea. Henny, Pat White was in the mix. They had so many options back then. I think I did it, Dan. And that's also a prime fill.
Who's the quarterback?
White.
Henny?
He's white.
Pennington?
No, Dan. The quarterback is black.
Oh, you're talking about Ronnie.
No, he's brown.
Who's brown?
Ronnie.
No, he's black.
No, he's brown.
Wait a minute. Who's in the backfield with him?
Polite.
Okay. Who's in the backfield with him? Please.
So bad.
Dan's acting.
It makes me feel so
old. 50 million DraftKings. Woo! Who's on first? That's we're gonna
polite.
Okay. That was some acting there.
Who's the quarterback? Please.
I think I need to hear it again.
Oh, do you? All right, you need to hear it again. All right, it moved very fast. Now you have to understand, there are white people here and brown people here and black people here. And some of them are named white and some of them are named brown, but none of them are named black. One of them is named Polite and one of them is named Henny.
Who's the quarterback?
White.
Henny?
He's white.
Pennington?
No, Dan. The quarterback is black.
Oh, you're talking about Ronnie.
No, he's brown.
Who's brown?
Ronnie.
No, he's black.
No, he's brown.
Wait a minute. Who's in the backfield with him?
Polite.
Okay. Who's in the backfield with him? Please.
Just terrible.
Who
Who's brown?
Just terrible.
You're so good.
All right, so
that was that phase where you thought acting was easy. Remember?
All right, so do it 10 minutes from now, guys. All right, you guys are Whittingham and Cody, Chris Cody are ready. They're going to do a Who's on First routine, but we've actually got some cool stuff from sports to talk about because there couldn't have been a funnier thing that happened this weekend. I dare you. I dare any of you to top me than AEW wrestling. Chris Jericho, and we like Tony Khan around here, and stunningly, Stugat, AEW wrestling earlier this year had better ratings than the Nets and the Sixers playing a game during the regular season.
It's crazy.
Because they've gotten some footing in the wrestling world, and they've done it at least in part because they... Did you see this? Did you see what it is that I'm talking about?
No, but they had better ratings than a regular season game, Nets-Sixers?
Yes.
Okay, wow.
Between those two teams.
Crazy.
And part of the reason is because they're funny. It's wrestling with a wink, and Chris Jericho, who's been great at that for a long time, spills into the office of Urban Meyer, the actual office of Urban Meyer, because they tape those things at the Jacksonville Stadium. And Urban Meyer is there pretending to be shocked. It's as likable as he's ever been. And then his assistant coach, Jessica disagrees. And then his assistant coach just starts firing footballs.
Oh, not just any assistant coach, Dan. Charlie Strong, who has never thrown a football in his life, apparently.
He's in Jacksonville?
Right. Makes sense, though.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitar. Show, even though Guillermo's not here.
Yeah.
Is that as likable as Urban Meyer has ever been? And did you know that Charlie Strong was in Jacksonville? Jessica, were you shaking your head no on that was not Urban Meyer being likable?
Well, I really truthfully didn't see it, Dan, but Urban Meyer and likable in the same sentence is just a difficult one for me, no matter what the context is.
Okay, but again, I'm telling you that this is wrestling with a smirk. So I understand in all the different ways that Urban Meyer is problematic.
She is so Sugats. I mean, she did see it. She's forming an opinion. I love you, Smetty.
Sugats. The Sugats hour this weekend in the 24-hour live stream is going to be dangerous. I don't know when it's going to be. It's not on the schedule, but it's going to happen.
Is it going to happen? I've just been told you it's going to happen Sugats. By her. And I don't think that's going to happen. I've seen all the paperwork. I've seen more planning than anything that's ever been done around this show. It's frightened me looking through all that paperwork. Like, wait, they expect us to plan this?
That's vintage Sugats right there. She just ropes Sugats into something she herself won't commit to. It's incredible.
Just wander in at 4:30. No, I'll get you on.
No, but neither one of them. We've got all the spots filled except for the McGillicuddy belly button search.
Greg, could anyone roll in here at 4 o'clock and you would let them on?
Anybody. It's an open door policy. Wander in.
Who do you think wrote the rundown, Dan?
Does she have an hour on this 24-hour streaming thing? How did she already finagle an hour? I would think a lot of people. No, she did not.
So the shipping container is going to, we're going to spotlight all the podcasts on the Levitard and Friends umbrella, and some that aren't even formally a part of us, like Greg Cody's podcast. But there's like a whole mystery crate carve out very early in the wee hours of Saturday morning, and the shipping container will drive that. I would be on 20 consecutive hours behind the board by that time, so that should be fun.
You're doing 24 hours without a break?
Yeah, I'm gonna go for it. I don't know if I can make it through there. I don't want to make a big deal out of it in case I disappoint, because there's like a little 3-hour window there during the graveyard shift that I might be able to get some shut-eye, but I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go for 24 hours.
You are brave and heroic.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, maybe that hour might just put me to sleep. Am I right, Greg? Rib, rib, rib.
Hey. You're heroic, Mike. Thank you, Mike.
The Kyrie Irving situation, Stugatz. Because I wanted to get more into Urban Meyer. We'll do it with funniest thing from the sports weekend a little bit later in the show, because it was funny even though it had Urban Meyer in the middle of it. And AEW wrestling is stronger. It's something that's gathering strength. But what do you guys make of what it is that's happening? When I tell you, when we're talking about the tensions in America, we're talking about gunshots all over Miami, we're talking about a hostility that results in America suddenly behaving like Europe has for a long time in terms of just throwing things at athletes, disrespecting athletes that way. This is not something, even with the malice at the palace, this is not something that America has been known for. Now you've got, after the pandemic and people are crazy, you got popcorn on Russell Westbrook. You got spit on Trae Young. If those aren't deterrents enough to learn that those fans are being banned for life and everything else, you get a bottle thrown at Kyrie Irving. Now you find out with the shame of the public arrest, because Boston's going to come down on this guy because you just made the entire region look like that
right.
for something super stupid. These are all small, isolated incidents. The media loves these things. They are content fountains. What is happening? Can we take these three things and have a conversation about what is happening to the relationship between America's fans and its athletes? Like, why are you that hostile toward the entertainers in that particular sport, which is the blackest of the sports, and it's the Black Lives Matter of the sport, and its ratings have been crushed for whatever the reasons are. The ratings are no longer what they were. The ratings monster is now Steph Curry. It's not LeBron. Steph Curry is the guy who gets people to televisions because he's still the family guy. He's still the guy with the unbelievable story that is palatable to everybody, even though he has chosen sides too at a time that America is taking sides. But I ask you guys the question, is it fair to take these three incidents, an isolated span over an unprecedented pandemic time, and wonder about what the hell is going on between America and its sports fan and its relationship with its athlete?
I think it's fair to wonder. I think Kevin Durant said it pretty well, actually, where you have people who have been in their apartments, in their homes, kind of bottled up for the last 18 months, and they're coming out and they're doing what they do and they're remembering what fans used to do. But the difference is the players aren't standing for it anymore. This has been going on forever. But Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell, they're not standing for it anymore, and it's going to change. And if it doesn't change, if you're a fan and you think you're going to go to the arena and do something like this, guess what? You're not. You're going to get arrested. You're going to get your season tickets revoked. And I have to feel like that's more important than you being a tough guy in front of your, you know, idiot friends for 5 minutes.
Yeah, at the root of it is disrespect. And that's one thing players don't like to be, is disrespected. Honestly, though, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more, because You have a cocktail of alcohol is involved, I'm sure, in some of these instances. And then you have to be a little bit, you're not right upstairs if you throw a bottle at a fan, okay? Maybe you've had too much to drink, but you're not right. And, you know, in a crowd of 15,000, you're going to have some crackpots. You just are. You're going to have people who don't know how to control themselves, and they're going to fling a bottle. I don't think it's fair to brand any a fandom, including Boston, because one person out of 15,000 does that.
But I would say, given what we've just seen happen in America recently, I do think that it's worth noticing that the spit, the hurled objects, the plea by Kevin Durant for, hey, we're not circus animals. We're human beings here. After all of that had happened, I do believe it's worth noticing, hey, it's not happening in baseball. Like, why is it happening there? Like, there are important games happening.
There's that fence.
Right.
And they're further.
You have to have a chooch to get a water bottle out in a baseball game.
It is amazing that the fans are still that close, just from a player's safety standpoint. I'm not even talking about projectiles. I'm talking about they're in the way. The athletes have outgrown the NBA court. They're a lot closer there.
I am asking you about the racial elements of this. I'm asking you about the hostility. All you need is one racist to not like one black guy, and throw in all the mix of sports emotions and drinking, and you hate that dude. Like, you hate that dude because you care about your Celtics, your Celtics pride. It's part of your identity. And that dude wrecked your team and now stomps on your logo. And you're entitled as a sports fan who pays his salary, quote unquote, to treat him less humanly than everyone else.
I think there's a lot of variables at play here. And yes, you cannot at all gloss over the racial element. It's a predominantly black league, and there's a lot of white customers that are doing this yelling. But the proximity to the court and the fans actually really affect that sport because they're so close. Like, you don't really see who's a baseball player that's shushing the crowd like Trae Young did. I'm not putting any of the blame on the basketball players. I think it's a byproduct of just everybody being on top of
one
another.
All right, Mike, what about hockey, though?
Like, there's glass. Like, there's separation. There's glass, there isn't separation in this sport.
Plus, those guys are beating each other up. I mean, they are. They're spitting on each other. Yeah.
I can't throw a projectile unless I'm right at center ice.
Okay, so let me ask the question another way then. How many times does that have to happen for me to wonder aloud, hey, what's the problem between America's sports fans and its athletes? Like, why? You love these guys so much. You pay so much. You wear their jerseys on your back. Like, what is the, what, how many of these have to happen and how short of a span for it not to be about pandemic or not to be about any of the other things? And I, let me give it a number. Let me say it happens 40 times. Would you guys then be able to wonder, hey, like, why do you guys hate these dudes so much?
Wait, it's also the responsibility of the media, too, because they keep feeding this narrative about Boston fans and the Mecca and Philadelphia fans. Again, not taking blame away from those individuals, but they're just, like, it's mob mentality. Wait, I thought we were all on this. We're the horrible place to play. We're the toughest fans in the league. You keep saying we got to make this place so unpleasant to play in. So they're just doing the stuff that they pretty much always did. And the players have been playing basketball without crowds. And yet people that have been, as Kevin Durant gave voice to, been locked up in their homes. You're having all of this release of emotion all at once. It's all too much.
Don't you think the athlete has just changed? The athlete has found their voice. I mean, Osaka's not going to talk after the French Open. Okay, I'm out. I'm withdrawn.
It's an interesting thing to discover after that summer, after the last decade of player empowerment. Stu Gatz, like, the Osaka thing to me is symbolic and interesting, at least in part, because wait until you see in this individual sport what I show you my power is. I'm going to self-care because the industry, the mechanisms, the media that is on my neck, I'm going to self-care. You can keep your money. I'm going to withdraw. I don't care if it hurts your prestigious tournament. I'm leaving. To me, that's an interesting thing to happen politically in the middle of the arena.
Especially that sport because it's so top-heavy. I mean, I would watch Osaka play Serena Williams, and I don't care if I ever see another match. You know,
forgive me, and thank you, Stu Gatz. I need to get to this because it's important, but forgive me for wandering all over the place here because I wanted to get away from this Boston conversation because Bill Burr spent 90 minutes yelling at me yesterday. And so remind me to tell you that story because he's a Boston fan and we were talking about the Kyrie Irving thing. And it was a real career highlight for me to just get a private show of beratement from one of the greats, Bill Burr, protecting Boston. So we will get to that, but I've got to do real comedy first. We're doing the progressive comedy around here. Who's on first as reenacted? Do you guys need any setup here? This is Abbott and Costello. We are arguing that this is one of the first comedy routines. This is a comedy duo for all time, correct? I don't know. Are we even making comedy duos anymore?
Key and Peele, Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dan and Stu.
So Abbott and Costello were the first in America.
Yeah, I think. Yeah.
1930s, right?
Yeah.
30s or 40s?
And they are represented by, you're the fat one, right, Chris?
How'd you guess?
Are you guys ready to start? Is there any buildup that this requires as we punctuate the segment with the height of comedy?
I want you to picture me with a cigar in my mouth, see? All right, here we go.
Yeah, do old-timey voices.
Yeah, better.
Okay.
Well then, who's on first?
Yes?
I mean the fella's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing.
Who's on first?
I'm asking you, who's on first?
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's it? That's who?
Yes.
Look, it says pause.
Oh, my good God.
Look, look. All right, and action. Look, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fella's name on first base.
Who?
That guy gets it.
That's it.
Who gets the money?
He does. Every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes.
Pause.
What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up for a first baseman, how does he sign his name?
Who?
The guy.
Who?
How does he sign?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
Pause. All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No. What's on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
On base at a time.
Those one base at a time.
One base at a time.
Oh. Well, don't change the players around.
I'm not changing anybody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Pause. What's the guy's name on first base?
No. What's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third. We're not talking about him.
Now, how do I get on third base?
Why'd you mention his name?
If I mention the third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know!
He's on third!
There I go, back on third again. I'm done. That's just me saying that.
There's another pause. There was no more to go.
There's more to go, man.
Reading, man.
I know, it's tough. I know. I feel you, Chris.
That felt, okay.
Put it on the poll, reading man.
Yes, reading man, yes or no, but that felt like a real executive battle at Meadowlark between Chris Cody and Whittingham on the broadcast chain. And Chris, you've got some work to do, Cody. You've got a little bit of work to do.
Pause.
Jason on our video team informs me that we reached a peak viewing during our Who's On First bit.
You're welcome.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.